check in every Thursday night for the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show.
Studio A, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here at the number one listener-supported radio station, Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes your audience. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rick, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the new American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Well, I'm sorry, at Revolution.radio. I still have that old site in my head, and every couple of months that comes out of my head, and it's no longer valid. So go, make sure you go to Revolution.radio. All right, that's pretty cool web URL. All right, then. Getting back on track, our first guest tonight is Ava Bird. And Ava has been overseas, so she hasn't been on the show for a little while, and we missed her. And I really look forward to having her on tonight. So hang on one second while I locate the proper number and all that. And here we go. We're going to give this a shot. Add her into the show right now. Let's see, is that Ava? Are you there? I think it's dialing. Sometimes this thing confuses me. Sorry about that. Anyway, Ava is a poet. And she was also the very first guest on the New American Dream Radio Show way back on February 3rd of 2011. Wow. Amazing that...
Please leave your message for 424204.
Well, we seem to be having a little issue getting hold of Ava, but we're going to get there. So please bear with me, be patient. These are the challenges of live radio, you know. All right. So let me just check something here. Okay, that one. Need to make sure I am using the right number. All right, let me try again. uh,
Hi, Chuck.
Well, hello. Hello, Ava. Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. It's really nice to have you back.
Why, thank you. Thank you for having me on once again. And I happy end of summer. It's officially autumn. And
that's right, yeah.
So happy autumn. It's harvest season. It's time to
yes.
reap our the things we planted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. Harvest time. So you have been having quite an adventure, I think. You were overseas for a while.
I did write some poetry that, man, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry I didn't have it ready. I meant to have it ready, but I have so many other things I could share. But we can, you know, there's also a lot to talk about. I have a lot of my poetry.
There sure is.
And, but I did notice there were a lot of cultural differences that I noticed a lot in people that just how uniquely Americans live in comparison to the rest of the world. It's really unique.
Really? Really? Well, that sounds like an interesting topic. I'd like to hear some more.
Well, have you ever been overseas, Chuck?
Yes, but I was 10 years old.
Well,
my perspective was a little different, and the world has changed. So
well, and once you live on the beach in Florida, it's hard to go anywhere that's better than that because, you know, it's like, it's nice to visit places, but when you imagine actually living there, you don't think, oh, I would want to live here, you know?
Really?
But it's nice to visit there and see how cultures have developed over centuries and how people relate to each other and how unique this culture that we live in America is to the rest of the world. There was a kid I met in England, and he said that he studied American culture in his college class.
So okay.
They study our culture around the world as, you know, like just different things. It is a phenomenon to the rest of
yeah.
the world for a lot of people.
Well, you know, I'm sure that there are college classes in the United States studying the culture of the European Union, or the culture of France, the culture of Britain, specific countries. That the fact that they have a college course doesn't surprise me so much, but I'm really interested in what might be in it.
Right. Well, I did wonder that too, but he was really positive. He was really fascinated by it, and you know, some people really look to elements of it as inspirational and interesting, but in so many ways, it's so, you know, it's a laughing stock, the world, in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's how,
I know.
You know, irresponsible and ridiculous the government behaves around the world, and how destructive and inexcusable it is. And yet the people, you know, must be going along with it. They're funding it. So you can like and appreciate the good things that American culture offers. And there are a lot of good things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd be the last to disagree with that. You know, all the criticisms that I may turn towards our country doesn't mean that I don't love it. But I don't think we're better than everybody else. I don't think we are I don't think we're qualified to be the world's policemen, or there are a lot of things that I think are wrong, but I still there are a lot of really good things too.
Well, exactly. It's very much the state of extremes in so many ways, and it is the evolutionary grounds for a lot of things. People look to America for leadership and representation and health and what are they going to do next? And there's a lot, the music.
Yeah, what are they going to do next? That sounds right.
You know what they really like is part a good contribution that Americans have made is music.
Oh, really?
A lot of great music that people listen to from the U.S.
Yeah.
And a lot of places don't really have, their music isn't that great when you think of around the world.
Mm. I don't know. I tend to think almost everywhere and almost everyone has music in them just waiting to be expressed. And so I don't necessarily, like to place one kind of music, as being better than another kind. I mean, there are things I like and things I don't like, but it's hard for me to say that they're really better. They just are more what I like.
Well, and there is a progression of musical growth that has developed in America that's unique to the rest of the world when you think of the combinations of things that people put together.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, we love it. We love this country, and we want the representation to be good. We want to be thought of as a respectable place with respectable people and wonderful people and arts and contributions and responsibility and good behavior and right action, right livelihood, right representation, right action.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we should be, That's what we should be for the rest of the world and everybody else, and ourselves.
Yeah.
And then other people can live that way. They don't have to come here and do it. Do it in your own country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'd like to know your impressions on a more personal or local kind of a level. When you were interacting with people, not governments, but just people, were there significant differences in the way they treated each other, in the way that they thought about their government or their kind of social responsibilities?
Yeah, that's...
I know, I'm asking a hard question.
Well, I mean, it did... I did, you know, think about that too and talk to people about how they... You know, their views on things. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the most part, people's governments behave in an atrocious and ridiculous and irresponsible way, and everybody's stuck dealing with it and footing the bill for it. People, you can't deny that it's not going on. I mean, it's right. But at the same time, people are responsible for fixing it and cleaning it up and making good representation and changing it. If we just, you know, let the demons run the show, what do we expect?
That's true.
You know, we just let them take over and, you know, don't speak up and just roll over and let it happen. And that's good. It's, doing it, you know, you're almost as guilty, you know, letting it happen and not speaking up. I think it's a responsibility to speak up. That's how I do this. Like, you do what you do, I do what I do. So that you can't... It can change if you get if you change it, but you can't expect them to do it. Of course, they don't want you to do it. So it takes effort, an act group, and community, and organizing, and action, and planning, and intelligence, and all kinds of things it takes to defeat the big evil system, the monster. But people are so fragmented and disabled and dumbed down, and many don't know what's going on at all, and they don't have an ounce of oomph in them after they've been zapped with all kinds of experimental gunk, eating gunk food, GMO fake food, and all the bunch of stuff. I mean, right when I noticed. The food is so much better in when you're not, you know, like the quality of the food you get places where Monsanto is not allowed, where they don't have allowed to have GMOs. Just the quality.
Oh, really?
The food tastes better. Yeah.
Oh.
And
now that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising that it does taste better, but it might be a little surprising that, Monsanto is blocked out from places, and that there are places where the food tastes better.
It was re-inspiring, like how, great, this is home.
Yeah.
This helps us to be. Yeah, and it was quite good. So that element I really enjoyed. Certain places, it was, you know, like, I mean, and as soon as I got back, I ate some food in restaurants to go, and I ended up with a rash, all kinds of rashes. Yeah, so I knew I was getting junk, zapped with junk, and it didn't happen once when I was there. And it just, in general, the food tasted way better. And
interesting.
But, I mean, you know, it's a shame that we don't have clean food and clean water. I mean, that should be just a given. The fact that we don't even have that. It's just how far the government has gotten out of control from the people. People haven't taken responsibility for it and spoken up and said that's not acceptable.
I think not just, the government's way out of control. But when you're talking about the... you know, the food and you know, what might be in it. So the, the fake food, basically, then you're looking at, you know, big pharma, big agro, whatever you want to call it, corporations, basically the corporations. And, hey, Bear. They're almost running the whole world these days.
Well, it's like, you know, kind of like taking an axe through the forest and just chopping through, and, you know, they just haven't gotten to your house yet, or they're on their way soon, or they've gotten someone, you know, it's sort of, that's what it's like, too. It's like, you know, it eats itself. It's so out of control.
Yeah.
It's so run by, you know, psychopaths and demonic forces, you know, empty-souled, you know. There's a lot of demonic people out there, possessed people, discarnate. There's a lot of, you know, bad energies out there. And,
yeah,
you know, they're running
yeah.
the planet, running things.
Yeah, I know that. You know, the crazies are in charge of the asylum, and, you know, what do we get? How do we get out?
Well, I mean, on that note, I feel grateful for every day, every opportunity to be able to live on this beautiful planet. We live in such a beautiful place and are gifted with a lot of things that we can and are able and should enjoy.
That's true.
And,
that's true.
You know, enjoy and give back and make sure that we live responsible lives that don't contribute
yeah.
to the system of evil and, you know, demonic forces and terror and
yeah.
all kinds of things that, that, you know,
yeah, well, I mean, I think enjoying
but
life.
They unknowingly.
Is,
they do it unknowingly. Every time they.
Oh.
I mean, a lot of it. You know?
Hmm.
Every time we pay taxes.
Yeah.
All that money goes and it's used to terrorize the rest, you know, a good portion of the world.
Yeah.
And it's not used responsibly, and people continue to do it and contribute to systems that, you know, wreak havoc and terror upon themselves. Therefore, and everything is selfish.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it to someone else or something else, you're doing it to yourself too. You might not see it, you might not,
mm-hmm.
you know, come back right away, but, you know, it's like,
yeah. Yeah, it's
karmic. We think of karmic action, how our actions influence the planet, people's relationships with the planet. You know, how did
yeah.
your systems interact with the planet that we live on?
Mm. Right. Well, I mean, you know, when you think about it, each of these systems is really a subsystem to the planet, which is a much bigger system. And of course, it's just part of, it's part of the solar system, and then that's part of the Milky Way, and then that's, it goes on and on. If you look at all these levels, Or if you just go out in the middle of the night and look at the stars or something, you realize we are pretty small and pretty insignificant. Yeah, we think a lot of ourselves, but you know, if you look at us compared to the whole universe, couldn't find us.
Well, that's what I wonder, too, like how much on borrowed time we're really living. Like, I can't believe the Earth has even put up with such an invasive species, such as humans, that can't even get it right to have their food and water clean.
Yeah.
Sure. All these years on the planet and this stuff, and people don't take responsibility for it and make sure that it's just So, but yeah, I mean, I try to be grateful for every day that I'm here and that I can live and do the things that, you know, I like doing, and try to give back in the form of art and free speech and inspiration,
yeah,
and teaching, yeah, and education and consciousness.
Well, and, since you mentioned giving back, I've got to talk about this ride that I'm doing in the month, during all through September. I'm not sure if I told you about it, but it's the Great Cycle Challenge, and it's a fundraiser to fight children's cancer. This is the fourth year that I have ridden in it, and basically what I do as a rider is I set a goal in for number of miles that I'll ride, and a goal for the amount of money that I will raise, and then I try to meet the goals. And all the money that's collected goes directly to the Children's Cancer Research Fund, and they've been responsible for some of the advances in fighting this horrible disease. Because, you know, did you know that 38 children die of cancer every week?
I didn't know that, but
that's way too big a number. Well, of course, one would be way too big a number, but anyway, that's what I it's one of the things that I've been trying to do to give back. So I started out this month with a goal of 400 miles and $500. And I've raised both goals three or four times. Anyway, my goal, my most recent goal, it was 600 miles, and I'm now at 607 with 3 days to go. So I'm thinking about raising it to 700. I don't know. But if I can get some more donations, then I'm definitely going to go to 700. My money goal started out at 500. Then when I hit that, I raised it to 813, which was the most I raised in any other year. And then I raised it to 1,000. Then I raised it to 1,500. Currently, it's at 1,800. So, and I've actually raised 1511.
So, is that miles that you've ridden?
Miles that I've ridden is miles that I have ridden, 607. you know, when people donate, it's not based on the mileage amount. They just donate a fixed amount. But you know, I try to, you know, build in some little, you know, incentive like that, you know, telling people, you know, if they donate a certain amount, I'll add that much to my goal or something like that. it's really been a fascinating month, riding around, Florida and this time for the first time I didn't stick to the Fort Lauderdale area. I went up to the Daytona Beach area with a friend helped me get up there. I put the bike on the train up to West Palm, and then I rode 45 miles north from there, and my friend met me and took me up to Daytona, and I did some rides up there and then came back down here.
That's awesome, Chuck.
Yeah, I'm you know, just trying to make it a special event. And of course, the main thing is raising money to fight cancer. But doesn't mean I can't have fun at the same time.
Now, are you sure this cause that you're asking people to contribute to?
Mm-hmm.
What are you sure that it is a one that is?
Am I sure they're really doing it? Yes, I am. I see amazing success stories from kids who are surviving cancer that probably wouldn't have 2 or 3 years ago, and it's a pretty big organization. Lots of people doing this pride, and I really think that they are making a difference, and so we who ride are making a difference.
It's good, Chuck. I know you do a lot of good giving back and volunteer work. I know you do a lot for your church, and you help a lot of people, and you do give back a lot. That's great, Chuck.
Yeah.
You have this show, doing the show is a lot of work. No, I know. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to managing stuff. And so it's nice to think that people can, donate, give back to you. As they listen to your show, they appreciate the content. They're listening on Revolution Radio, and they're tuning in and they listen to you. And they hear that, they can, sit down a little for Chuck for his cancer cause.
Right.
And his bike riding. That's good that you're riding. Get you out.
Well,
it's funny to ride a bike. It is.
I kind of ended up monopolizing the end of this and didn't give you much of a chance to finish, but it's actually time for us to move on. But I really, I always love visiting with you, Ava, and I look forward to talking more next month, and hopefully we'll hear a little something from that cat.
All right.
Okay. Thanks again.
Chuck, and,
all right.
Happy autumn. Happy Halloween. Lots of love.
Right back at you. All right. Love you. All right. Well, our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferrigio. Philip joins me every week from Orange, Florida. And there, I heard a voice. I believe that Philip is in the building.
Yeah, Philip, how are you doing?
Hey,
let's hope I can get through this with this post-nasal drip. It's so bad.
If you want me to do the reading and we'll talk, that's fine too. Yeah, it's up to you.
Yeah, but you don't have the reading in front of you, so you can't do it anyway. Okay.
Well, which one is it?
It's the brand new one. The Futility of Feudalistic Democracy.
Well, now, I have it in front of me.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to try. If I can't do it, I'll tell you.
Go for it.
First things first. If you want to know what's going on in the world, especially the political world, do not turn on the boob tube. And that is what it is. A vehicle for boobs. similar to the world of sports media, if someone is allowed on mainstream television, they have to be a complete sellout. Easy to understand. The two-party, one-party system is owned by the super-rich corporate empire. Thus, their embedded apologists working for the media channels reflect the views of one party or the other. In sports, the owners of media decide what the the fans are allowed to see and hear. This writer was on the phone with one of my small business customers from Montana the other day. I asked him what professional football team did he follow. He said, and I quote, "Ever since they," which he means the black players, because 70% of them are in the NFL are black, "ever since they took a knee, I gave up on following pro football." So, you think about this. How quickly did Colin Kaepernick fade from view as no team would even sign him? Despite the myriad of season-ending injuries of quarterbacks that year and the years after. By the way, Chuck, as a postscript, Kaepernick 2 days ago, or yesterday, sent a letter to the Jets asking if he can try out to be on their practice squad. Chuck, I'm telling no one yesterday in the sports media or this morning even talked about that.
Wow.
Yeah, didn't even talk about it.
Yeah.
That's how far he is. Okay.
Well, hey, they went out and spent a whole lot of money for a really big star, and he didn't last very long.
Yeah, he lasted Okay, four points. Yeah. All right, now, the guy...
Which is sad, but still.
As a Kaepernick was a Super Bowl quarterback a few years before he lowered his knee.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, how many mega millionaire players continue to take that knee? None. The protests faded just like that. Yet, rogue cops continue to kill unarmed black men.
Mm.
Now, don't you just love it how two-party, one-party media savants keep parroting the lie that our nation is a democracy? Oh, it's a democracy if you have mega millions to get on the ballot and actually win an election. Now, I have written many times in my columns about how it takes an obscene number of millions of dollars to win a seat, even in state legislatures. The last person to get high up on a presidential ballot was Ross Perot in 1992, a billionaire who spent his own bread. Thus, there is no democracy in America. This lie has been told via Republican, Democratic politicians and media hacks forever. So, we get two parties who continue this myth. And we, the serfs, pick from column A or column B, as Ralph Nader always referred to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Trump sold himself as a populist who intended to drain the swamp. When anyone with, half a brain should have known that he came out of the swamp. His opponents, Hillary Clinton and lunchbox Joe Biden, owed their entire careers to the super rich who filled that swamp. So here's what it translates into. Trump promoted and still receives his support, as do all of other Republicans, from basically angry white people. Their anger is against anyone not white, anyone gay or recently transgender, and of course, those who promote abortion. Now, sadly, this fascist element of understanding influences blue-collar and white-collar white Americans who are sold the bunk that blacks and browns are sucking on the government's teat. And they're coming for us. If only they would realize that they are in the same prison with working stiffs of all colors and creeds. The Democrats so slyly keep their rhetoric confined to identity politics. They caress women who want the right to end a pregnancy within what was once a legal and rational time period. They protect the LGBTQ community, as they should be doing. They stand up for civil rights, but yet allow the perpetrators of institutional racism to continue to plunder low-income communities through the piggish absentee landlords charging too high rents with decrepit services. They allow the infrastructure of those areas to continue to be below par with the rest of American towns. Of course, this is not solely a people of color issue. Plenty of white Americans live in squalor throughout our nation. Polls show that many such whites continue to support demagogues like Trump and his party. Sadly, their anger at the Democrats, who their parents and grandparents always supported since FDR, reveals very much. The Democrats do as little as possible to support the working stiffs. Why? Well, because they know that their adversary on the other side of the aisle has never done anything for working people. So that issue will never be a defining one when it's time to vote in this so-called democracy. So finally, if one really wishes to have a true democracy, then socialism is the only solution. Disallowing all private donations or one's own money spent out of the process is step one. With public funding of all elections, we can finally see a chink in the wall of this two-party, one-party fortress. Thank you. Thank you.
So I'm a little confused about how socialism can be a true democracy, because it seems to me socialism is going to be socialism and democracy is going to be democracy and a republic is going to be a republic.
Let me answer that.
Okay.
Socialism is an economic institution. Democracy is a political institution. So socialism, unfortunately for you, has nothing to do with democracy or a republic. You can have a republic and a democracy that is also socialist. So, you know, basically socialism is not the government running everything. What socialism is you would continue under any real socialist system to have a plethora of small business owned and operated by people, okay? And all the big corporations and services would be owned by the community, by the county, the town, the state, whatever. So you wouldn't have private health care. You would have what the English have, national health, the NHS. And we would pay through it through our taxes, and it would be really a lot. It would be minimal compared to all the other money that our taxes go towards, like the defense, like the military spending and all that crap. Yeah, it's socialism. Socialism just means that you'd have government-run health care, okay, with no profit. A doctor would work for the government. He would get a salary, or she would get a salary. If you needed medicine, it would probably be for free. They wouldn't charge you if you had something wrong with you and the doctor prescribed it. And that's just one aspect of socialism. Of course, you'd have major corporations, energy. Okay, energy. The bills that you and I pay every month in Florida, the Florida Power and Light or Duke Energy, whatever they are, it would be owned by the community, either by the county or the city or the state, the power. So all the electricity and power would come without any profit. Okay, you wouldn't have the exorbitant salaries and that the heads and of these companies are getting. You wouldn't have that. It would be a much fairer system for all concerned, and you would still have. You would have an aspect of capitalism. It wouldn't just be totalitarianism, But I don't see, I'll give you an example. Why shouldn't the employees of a corporation be owners, be owners in that corporation? Why shouldn't the employees, own a percentage of the actual company? I mean, think about productivity, how that would increase, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I remember the CEO of CVS Pharmacy. This is 5 years ago when I wrote about it. Now he's making more, or whoever has his job. He was making, Chuck, $55 million like 6-7 years ago. Huh. CEO of CVS. Yeah. And meanwhile, go into any CVS store, Chuck, and see how they cut staffing. I was in the pharmacy area. There was one pharmacist and one person helping her, and that was
right.
It. And there was a million things had to be done.
Sure.
It's just,
and they got rid of most of the cashiers so they could do all that automated.
Yeah, that's right. And you go to a Target store, because I don't shop in Walmart. I have a philosophical. But anyway, Target. Target now is doing that too, right, Chuck? They're doing all the self-serve. There's very few counters where you can go and pay. You have to go on the machine. And, you know, for a lot of senior citizens like myself, that's a little difficult for us because we don't really know how to do that. To have someone there to tell you, but that someone is not always there, you know,
they're pretty much always there because they've got to watch that nobody decides to say, nobody noticed I didn't really scan this and walk out of the store.
Really?
But,
I don't know much about how that works. I mean, I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, that's big time. That's the biggest
challenge. So why have it? So why just give the cashier a job? People want to be cashiers, Chuck. Come on.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
That's the thing. People, who wants to be who wants that job? So of course it becomes more attractive to.
I'm gonna tell you something else. By the way, did I tell you that we have to pay off? I think I told we have to pay off $3,300 because she had to go to the emergency room for a kidney stone.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
And we pay $8,000 a year for her Blue Cross hospitalization.
Right, and that's ridiculous.
That covered almost nothing. It covered like 5%. It's anyway. So, what I was telling you. So now, have you noticed a lot of times when you go to a doctor's office for a visit, they want you to pay in advance. It never used to be that way.
Yeah.
I mean, you walk up to the window.
They had too many people
jumping.
Say, see ya.
Yeah, that's why they're doing it. But that's the truth, though. That's why they're doing it, because more and more people probably just can't afford all these bills for seeing doctors.
Or
so they go to the doctor, and they just kind of cut out.
Yeah, or they're just basically so sick of the whole situation that they'll get away with anything they can.
Chuck, we already talked about this. There is hardly any comprehensive mental health care.
Oh, yeah. I'll
give you an example. There's someone close to me, someone I know, who I don't know for sure, but a person has an anger problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we know that. We know historically.
Yeah.
We don't know. We're not allowed to talk to the psychiatrist or the therapist because of confidentiality, so we don't know what this person has. But here's my question. When I did call the person's therapist, he's a nice person. He's a social worker. He doesn't make a lot of money. He's not a psychiatrist. I said, I think this person could use group therapy for anger. Isn't there a group therapy in this area for people with anger? And he said, no. But I'll give you another call of an organization I called up. The thing is out of business. There's no such thing. The point is, how could you
I'm sure there are actually anger management programs, but they're like court ordered. They don't kick in until the person actually loses it. They're not trying to help people before a problem happens. They want to wait.
I don't even know if there is one around here because, this guy has been around a long time, this therapist, and he told me categorically, I don't know of anyone. I mean, there is none, unfortunately. you know. And maybe it's only with people that have a court order that they have to go. But as you said, Chuck, if a licensed therapist or licensed psychiatrist says the person needs anger management group therapy, then they should tell them, here's a place, call up and make an appointment, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
There should be. I mean, there's so much anger out there, Chuck. There's so many people.
It.
I mean, it's with me, it's sadness. So, you know, my anger turns, but there's a lot of people that anger doesn't turn to sadness. It turns to doing, you know, to reaching out to others and trying to vent on someone else.
It turns into acting out. And,
acting out, or
that
drugs.
That can be really a big problem.
I don't understand.
Think about that acting out. If, you know, in the extreme cases, you know, that's where you have these, you know, people.
AR-15, yeah.
Exactly, right. I was going to say you have people going postal, but you know, that's kind of an old-fashioned term because now it's everybody doing it.
It's everybody. But, you know, it's just mental health. I talked about it with you many times. I spoke to a guy I know from the gym, and he works out, and he's a school psychologist. I asked him this nine years ago, I think I asked him. I said, Mike, I said, how many schools? He said, you wouldn't believe how many schools I have to go to because they only have one of us for a whole area. I said, you mean there's not one in every school? He goes, no. I go, there should be one. He goes, yeah, I agree. Every school should have a school psychologist in there. I mean, you gotta. There's not 100 kids in the school. A lot of these schools have 1,000 kids, 2,000 kids. You know, you need a school psychologist on the ground. It's not once every 2 weeks for an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
But they don't have it. That's the problem. And no one talks about it. Where's the Moms for Liberty? They're so concerned about school books on transgender or slave or coming down too hard on slavery. Why don't they get involved in this? Mental health in schools, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It's just
the values are just all.
That's why you need socialism. I'm serious. If we had a socialist society here, we would have better mental health. We would.
Mm-hmm.
We have better. The medical care would be more comprehensive. A woman needs a kidney stone treatment. She's in pain. They're not going to hit her for $3,000. She's going to get probably nothing. She's probably not going to get charged.
Yeah.
You know. So this is the insanity. And it's funny because there's a lot of doctors now, Chuck, who are on salary, believe it or not, because they work for these big groups. Like my ear, nose, and throat doctor, he said, I'm on salary. He said, I work for this corporation here. They got about 8 doctors.
Yeah.
So there's not even like a doctor have his own practice, you know. No, that's changing now. There's some of them left, but most of them are in these groups. They're on salary.
And they don't make anywhere near, what they used to, when they were independent. The whole profession has been, it's been taken over by the pencil pushers.
I was 10 years old in Brooklyn, New York. I had the flu. It was after a big snowstorm, I remember, and my family doctor, Alecandri, he had house calls that day. And
I
we
bet.
Were on
he
the
came
list.
Over to help, right?
3:30 in the afternoon, he shows up. He was doing, and he, let me tell you, his office was, my mother had to take me on 2 buses to get to his office in Brooklyn. He was not anywhere near where I lived.
Uh-huh.
And yet I was one of his patients, and I was on the list that needed house call. And he came. I swear, Chuck, it was a foot and a half, a foot of snow, like 2 days earlier. And they just were starting to clean it up in Brooklyn. And he was doing house calls, Dr. Alecandri, okay?
When I used to visit my grandfather or my uncles, who are doctors, we'd be sitting around, you know, having our dinner or whatever. There'd be a call. They're out. They're out. They're gone. They went to deal with it.
Because that was a vocation. Now it's a business. It's a business. You are no longer a doctor or a dentist. How about dentists? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Chuck. Nobody works on Friday anymore. Nobody works on Friday. I mean, my dentist used to, 5 days a week and half a day on Saturday. Saturday morning, you could have an appointment with him. My dentist in Brooklyn. Nowadays, all the doctors, they're all closed on Friday, right?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Chuck, it's unbelievable. It's so ludicrous. It really is. But anyway, that's the country that we live in, Chuck.
Indeed. So, since we're about done with our time here, I'm going to share with you the somewhat improper reaction I had when you were reading the beginning of your article. Okay. So, talk about the boob tube, and then you have this great line. You said, "And that's what it is—a vehicle for boobs." And I thought to myself, "Oh, isn't that the Barbie movie?"
The Barbie. There's actually a Barbie movie, right? Unbelievable.
What there is, yeah. So, hey,
what a country! What a country! That's a great country. Everybody, get the movie Wag the Dog. Okay, I'll talk to you, Chuck. Take care.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message. Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crip Rick's Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. On Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm Chuck Gregory coming to you from Fort Lauderdale, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio. And remember, it's a listener-supported station. They deserve your support. They keep two streams of radio shows going pretty much 24/7. Really a great bunch of people. And I hope you will show them some support. There are a number of different ways you can do it. I support them. I'm a subscriber on Patreon. There are a number of other things you can do as well. So, that's definitely worth doing. Show them some love. Our next guest of the evening is Michael Annis. Michael is a poet, a publisher, a musician, and a very interesting guy. And he's a regular guest in this fourth week of each month on the New American Dream Radio Show. And I'm going to add him into the show right now. Michael comes to us from Denver, and as I said, he's a multi-talented person, and we'll see what he has for us tonight.
Hello.
Well, hello, Michael. Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm glad to have you here, and you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Chuck. It's good to be back on the New American Dream Radio Show.
All
so,
right.
As always, after a few thoughts, I'm going to continue reading from my new work, Breath, beginning right where I left off last month. That was prior to the poetry show that you had at the end of the month?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Oh, if there's time, which I'm fairly certain now that there won't be, I'll read a new poetation, the one that I thought I might read at the poetry show and decided to jump ahead to something else. But anyway, listening to the last segment, a shout out to Phil.
Ah.
The religious folk who are absolutely convinced that socialism is of the devil should reread the Book of Acts. In it, one will find that the apostles, the disciples of Jesus, after he died and left them, that group, Peter, John, etc., actually set up a socialist society. You can't define it as anything else. A socialist society where everyone was to bring all that they had to be shared in common among all who believed.
Huh.
That is socialism.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that we've cleared up kicked devil in the rump right out of the room.
All right.
Hey, man, I'm really working on not using four-letter words. I guess rump is a four-letter word, but that we can get beyond.
That one's acceptable, yeah.
Unless you spell it W R U M P, I hope you catch the segue there. Okay. So here comes. Did you watch the latest Republican debates?
I
have Bless you, Mark.
Patience. I have not the patience to watch those things. Oh, my goodness.
So let me fill you in, because I thought them kind of silly and pathetic. And the candidates actually talked about mostly nothing. And here are a couple of quotes I read. I'm going to read you a couple of quotes that I read in the media in response to the candidates, what I call show of farce. So the latest Republican debates distinguished itself not only in its inanity, but because of its core lack of meaning. That was quote one. Quote two, Chris Christie, now had his opportunity to speak directly to Trump, in quotes. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You're ducking these things. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that. No one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck. So my question to that is that meant to be clever and impressive? So as far as I'm concerned, it's still circling the drain as a visionary concept.
I've got to interrupt you for 1 second, Michael.
Okay.
Because Philip, who you just mentioned for another reason, one of the things that he used to say regularly back around 2016 was that if the Democrats had run Donald Duck against Donald Trump, that he would have won. But it was okay. Only their choice. It just dovetailed so perfectly. I had to throw it in.
Oh, I'm a big fan of segues and dovetails. Okay. In fact, I think I'll cut my hair in a dovetail sooner or later, just so I can be a walking billboard for the concept. So anyway, since I am now running out of time, it's an admission of failure to ignite any imagination whatsoever among the general Republican voters. Okay, quote number what, three? Why is the Republican field so bad? One explanation might be that amid the cyclic loyalty wars that have largely consumed the GOP for the 8 years since Trump began his first run for the presidency, the supply of new ideas has dwindled. So I say it's not loyalty wars, it's rather fealty wars. Who can bend over far enough to satisfy one, in quotes, a mob boss? I'm still waiting for the Republican health care plan that is to replace Obamacare. Whatever happened to that?
Yeah.
Okay. So there another quote from the media. There was something stale in the endless repetition of lines about the crisis at the border, the national debt, and the importance of family values. Jerry Falwell, and among others, and family values, and I can't remember the other guy who really coined the terminology of family values. Anyway, that term, it is so stale and cliche anymore. No one even understands the meaning. It's like a used car salesman saying, "Wow, listen to that motor hum," when what you hear is sputter and clank, and is exactly like MAGA must refer to some greatness in the past, but it's never clarified. It is nebulous. Now, like, your guess is as good as mine to what decade we refer. They certainly couldn't be referring to the presidency of George W. Bush. So are they referring to the presidency of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush in the 80s? And what makes that decade great politically or socially? So if one is referring to the 70s, one gets Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford for the Republicans and Jimmy Carter for the Democrats. If it's the 60s, one gets JFK and LBJ. So obviously not that decade if one is a Republican. So it could possibly and probably mean the 50s, the decade of Truman and primarily Eisenhower, but it was great only if you were a white male or married to one. Ask most any black or Latino about how great the 50s were. It's a meaningless phrase meant to induce nostalgia for a time when women did not have equal rights. Gays and lesbians were locked up in social closets and jails. Blacks and Latinos most often did not have opportunities for higher education and thus dwelled in projects or depressed neighborhoods and had most of their voting rights denied them. So at what time in American history are the MAGA people referring to? All the while, through every decade, going back now more than 100 years, climate change has consistently accelerated in a negative direction. Perhaps we are not supposed to factor in what is happening in Earth's environment or on land or in the oceans, as if that's of minor concern, similar to the content and substance of yesterday's Republican debates. We are to bury our heads in the sands of frivolity, trinket acquisitions, 15 minutes of fame for everyone, commercial values as a surrogate for family values, sloganeering, religious dogma substituting for actual scientific investigation, pop star idol worship, pro football, etc., etc., and so forth. So recognizing the conflict of climate change versus family values, I am again reading tonight, as I said, from my new book, Breath, and providing some insights on what I have dealt with therein. And all of this tonight is just a prelude to my essay, Environmental Holocaust, a chapter from my prize-winning book, Brave New World Order, from which I've done several new American Dream shows in the past, and will present again on the New American Dream in the future.
Good.
So I don't know if you've noticed, I don't know how you couldn't notice, but we're now seeing on national news, interspersed with mass shootings and the war upon Ukraine and so forth, mobs of looters descending on merchants and very unfortunate, highly vulnerable individuals to whom they show no mercy or restraint. I refer the New American Dream audience to the 1981 Nobel Prize winning work, Crowds and Power by Elias Canetti. It's a book I turn to quite often, and it's an invaluable resource of social analysis from which I will read a highly relevant excerpt when we get further along in my Breath book. Well, this general societal upheaval is but the opening act for worldwide mass violence when exacerbated climate meltdown begins to hit its stride, because the climate will become unbearable for most of humanity, and no real solutions will be offered to that same most of humanity. Masses of refugees coming up through our southern borders or descending on Europe's milder climate from Africa's incinerating climates, which is another opening act for global flight from equatorial zones toward more temperate zones, becoming arid and semi-arid with the heating up of the planet. Mass exoduses across the planet toward both geographical poles to avoid being baked and fried where one lives will become the status quo, and try to stop it if you will. Now I want to read verbatim. So like I do this like for a week in advance, you know, I get all excited. Okay, I've got to be on the New American Dream, so I have to say something halfway intelligent. I better start taking notes as things come to me. So I want to read verbatim from the general notes I've been making over this last week in preparation for tonight's show. And I want the understanding to be that all these notes fit into the allegorical themes within my book, Breath. You have a copy of that book, Breath, don't you, Chuck?
I do. As a matter of fact, I have it right here in front of me, ready to follow along.
Oh, cool, man. Or hot, one of the two. I don't. Okay, number one. I've numbered them. So here we go. Number one, Phoenix, Arizona. Last summer, the hottest city in America experienced in 31 days in a row through the month of July of 110 degrees or hotter. My question, who plants? This is true. You can look this up. 110 degrees or hotter, 31 days in a row, record breaking. Who plants a city of 3 million people in the middle of the desert? And where does all the water come from to quench the needs of those people physiologically and agriculturally? Number two, science is being censored once again by bonehead ignorance and superstition. The great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren of the folks who believed the sun circled the earth and God was up there just beyond the clouds with everything under his control, including potential nuclear war and world extermination by disease and non-survivable temperatures, despite the great plagues of Europe in the Middle Ages saying otherwise, those people and people who think that for the sake of personal fortune, it is wise to place 3 million people in the middle of a desert, are dictating pseudo-understanding and or denial of our present climate crises looming just ahead. Key word, deny. B, the characters, and this is where I'm getting really involved with an analysis of the book itself. The characters in my book, Breath, are more or less living in abstract individual worlds of their own creation, similar to many of us right now, each one imagining a different world from a single source, that source being the internment camp where they have all been forced to exist. Yet they have no singular autonomies. Everything is ground down into a politically religious mass of suffering and survival, with the best to hope for is being able to cope with each passing day. And of course, that refers back to the psychology in the concentration camps and the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, number four. Most of my readers of this book do not question the all-prevailing presence or overwhelming intensity of the wind, near supersonic, the omnipresent sound of which is like flying through thunderheads in a jet airliner, and which is a result of climate cataclysm in the story. The place is Wyoming, which is and has been notoriously windy in the past, but this climate meltdown in the very near future has brought a sustained, never-ending volley of wind intensity never before experienced there. Number five, the readers of the book are far more curious about why and how Christians are in an internment camp, which in this section of the larger work, Messenger of the Covenant, so this is, Breath is only a part of the larger work, Messenger of the Covenant. It's never disclosed why they're there. Reasons for their internment could be cults commit felonies in the name of God, or are they political insurrectionists, or is the current government that has placed them there a fascist regime, or a communist regime, or an anarchist regime, which is kind of a contradiction of terms, that has rounded up all religious groups.
Yeah.
Number six. But the story is more about the effects the environment has on all the characters, whether inside or outside the camp. Throughout the story, the changing environments are always extreme and constantly produce negative impacts, followed by negative outcomes and results. Between the lines, the question is posed, how do people scramble to remain at the top of their societal food chain? Number seven, in other words, at what point under ultra-extreme environmental duress, physical, climatic, social, political, religious, all environments, all melting down, at what point do human beings cease being responsible for their thoughts, words, deeds, and actions? Because physiologically, heat impact the brain, and thinking becomes nearly impossible under extreme heat. When and where religion becomes exposed to superstition and minds are no longer capable of rational functions, one reader accused this story of being cynical, and yes, it is. But that is not all that it is, if only by the token that it's not cynicism, but survival at any price. Number eight. Before that happens, we desire and attempt to continue reverting back to the familiar. What is familiar and stable and non-threatening to us is the fabricated society and as individuals living within that fabrication, to what we've managed to successfully process in our lives and cope with in the past, such as beliefs and structures and movies and birthday celebrations and Christmases and on, yet, as shown in the story, those eventually fall away and fall apart under the slaughter of climate cataclysm.
Hmm.
Number 9, and you know this, Chuck, what I'm going to talk about here for briefly. I personally experience daily an example of these extreme conditions in my own home. Not the climate down, but all things that could be considered continual duress without any significant let up or relief, and I believe you know why.
Oh, yes.
I feel shock and awe visited upon the children constantly. I think about this. Visited upon the children and innocent citizens of Baghdad or the Ukraine or Dresden during World War II. But there will be a greater shock and awe in the future, and that is simple environmental heat driven out of control by climate cataclysm, as was experienced in Phoenix last July, only in greater measure and greater frequency for longer periods of time. Then there is the other man-made firestorms, such as nuclear war or millions of acres of wilderness ablaze with not enough resources to put out the fires.
Hmm.
Number 10. But now, as the planet continues to heat up and melt down simultaneously, environmentally, politically, and socially, in our socio-political haunted house of a world, all we hear about are the decoys. The decoys. Donald Trump this and Taylor Swift that and on, both anathema to any serious discussion regarding what is the most pressing issue of ours and any generation, including the great world plagues of the Middle Ages or the 1950s, 1960s trepidation about nuclear war, which might still happen, in fact. How can it not, given the ravages the environment will produce on the human beings and their powers of reason versus their panic to survive. So now, and I probably am already out of time, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read a little bit. All this in mind, I'll continue reading from Breath where I left off. Or should I not? What do you want
it,
me to
go for? You got 7 minutes.
7 minutes. A bounty of 7 minutes. So here we go. From Breath. Let me know if you can't hear me.
I can hear you.
Mother Nature's inglorious inquisitor, the ever-hammering wind, blinded the eyes of wild horses breaking their legs in prairie dog holes, while tiny wisps of smoke forming the ancient names Nun and Nonette were carried off in careening chariots of wind into the macabre earthly hells that awaited them. Murmurations of long-forgotten idola, their wings of fire, shrilled into hives of thunderheads burying the present under hauntologies of the past. I'm on page 13, Chuck. And this, all too often, was where his church was forced to meet. Outside a barracks quarantined by the onslaught of viral infection, here, now, in the cacophonous chorus of windswept barns, humming eaves, and clanging fence gates, that was Wyoming. Gales spewing spittle through pews of existence flung sweat from enraptured parishioners, daunting enough to brave the storming forces where souls blew down to their knees, then out. Makeshift altar candles whirling flames for asylum as the burning indignation of Apostle Norman Ernest Harms churned like rolling sagebrush toward a grass fire in open defiance of the season of Christ's birth. In spite of peace on earth, goodwill toward men, he fumed, finally boiling over, his words burning into the first page of a scathing epistle to the churches of Indonesia, something he should have done decades ago, yet could not, as he had yet to receive his own apostle's anointing, though he had coveted it mightily since his youth. And what, for Christ's sake, was he, Norman Ernest Harms, all-knowing archapostle of the Last Days Church, doing here anyway? Ironically grabbed by the hand of God Almighty and thrown like dice from northern Colorado into the butthole of southern Wyoming, God's forsaken place, the old and desolate plains of the final frontier of cattle rustling, saloon shootouts, birdcage whoring, and rattlesnakes, where carnal winds tormented him night and day. And for what, sayest thou, Lord? For a handful of eccentric devotees, dullards, water diviners, crackpots, but most certainly not fit, presently, for raising up as apostles and prophets to preach the eternal word. A rotting gray board tore off the barn and came hurling at his front window, smashing into it, leaving a spider web crack. He caught himself cursing the wind, and so he would have to repent. Soon he would catch himself again, not knowing how many times he'd cursed it in the course of a day and night, and not caught himself. Thus, he'd repent a few extra times more. Curse and repent. Curse and repent. It had become a daily chore, a chore for an apostle who should never curse the natural order of God. If he had but lived in a just universe, one ruled by God where he did not have to defer to the free will of humans and the others missing the train to glory, the Untermenschen subhumans proven through scientific theories in the early 20th century to be of lesser mind, ergo it was their unsound choice, perhaps familial and biblically not through God, he would be preaching to multitudes in Los Angeles or New York City or the thronging mobs of Tokyo. A virtual hell of a multitude of unbelievers lived there. So no, not here, not Wyoming. Norman Ernest Harms should be saving nations of souls like Jesus God himself, for he was no ordinary man, nor binary man, no longer even of their species, much less their race. He was a new man in Christ Jesus, Homo Christos, no longer sapien, the old man of sundry fornications and blasphemous living was gone. Wasn't it the deep state government that hustled him here, this crypt meant to resemble a camp? Yet nothing happened without God's permission, and God made no mistakes. He'd preached it many times. So he, Apostle Norman Ernest Harms, in this moment, in this timeless timeline of God's mercy and grace, was in an internment camp in Fort Cond, Wyoming, his good left hand waving, raised toward heaven, just beyond the wind above the other side of the walls, arcing into a ceiling. So be it through God. A state camp for those whose minds had not yet been fully certified as sound. Governmentally designated as committing a crime against humanity by refusing to receive the vaccine. Or would they? If Apostle Norm had the final say, anticipating another long, exhaustive struggle with socialized whatnot, this time medicine. Was Jesus a government health care worker, a first responder serving King Herod Antipas? N.O. Did he mix potions, bottling them like soft drinks for the masses? N.O. Was he a practitioner of magic, a dispenser, pharmacopoeia? N.O. No. He laid hands on all who came to him and healed the sick. Ergo, a vaccine, if not the veritable mark of the beast, truly a mark of perdition and a fundamental desertion of faith. Furthermore, a global pandemic had its upside. Just get a grailful of all those who were now standing in line considering everlasting life by getting aboard the soul train rather than permanent death, such as stubborn unbelievers experience after they had died, and they died like flies now, pope or no pope, worldwide, every race, religion, and nationality, their lungs slaughtered, their life breath annihilated by the latest virus, little beasts, Therion, as they were known to the Greeks. History had shown pandemic approximately every 100 years, but now, as the climate collapsed into hostile, raging unpredictability, the lethality of new diseases increased in swarms of tornadic frequency. Worse, the endgame of a few foolish human race's unabated sins of foolishness was death, desolation, hellfire, children from birth to death, yet all accountable. Ever faithful and at the service of God and potentially multitudes needing, but not craving yet, spiritual mitigation, eternal life insurance, and deliverance from the chains of their worlds, Harm's arms would drop off someday from all the baptisms, rebaptisms, casting outs, and hallelujahs in a government holding tank, no less, that he had registered with the IRS as Fort Cond Ascension Ministries Church, a not-for-profit but wholly prophetic organization. Harms had added the two near puns himself on the forms, thinking them ever so clever, perhaps even enticing to some lost soul. So I will end there is that section, and then I will bring next month with a new section, as you probably know, I will.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Very interesting hearing you read that. The whole this whole segment has been very good, I think. So thank you so much for joining me, Michael.
Thanks for having me on, Chuck.
All right.
See you again next month.
Yes, indeed. I look forward to it.
So, is there a 5 Thursday month next October, this October, coming October? Is that 5 Thursday?
Seems to me it's in November, but I forget. I'll let you know.
Okay, cool, man.
All right. Thanks again. All right.
All right. Good night, Jeff. Yeah.
Good night, Mike. Yeah. We have one more guest for you, folks. Karen Katowski is going to be joining us from Virginia. Karen is a fascinating guest. She was in the Pentagon on 9/11, and she's run for office in Virginia, and neither of those is all that relevant. Basically, she is an extremely astute political analyst and always a lot of fun to talk to. So I look forward to bringing her back onto the show, and let's see, here we go. Okay. We're going to add her into the show right now. So Karen Katowski joining us from Virginia, where she's actually run for office. Hello, Karen. Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm so glad to have you on tonight. And, what you got for us?
Yeah, well, actually made a list of things.
All right. How organized.
I made a list, then I lost it. Hopefully I'll remember what's on it.
okay. That's like me.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But what started, I looked at a speech that that Biden gave, I guess honoring the late John McCain, two neocons, he's in a pod. And he gave a speech, and the way it was reported, I guess he just did it today or yesterday. And the way the speech was reported, just shut that off now. The way the speech was reported, it made it out as if this is his 2024 presidential campaign theme. That what was in this speech is the Biden theme for next year. Now, I have long hoped felt that he will not. That he will be convinced by others in the Democratic Party to stand down and not run again. because it's a big risk for the Democrats to run him in so many different ways. And also Kamala is no better. And I'm referring back to the New York Times David Ignatius piece from a couple weeks ago where he publicly lauded how great Biden and Kamala are doing, and at the same time then said, and you cannot run, you and her both. And he included her in there too. He wanted them both to basically say, you know, we're not running, open the field up to because otherwise, you know, the Democrats are stuck with the very wonderful and fantastic RFK Jr. So you know, they don't want that. That's actual peace candidate. That's actual guy who wants to fix the country. That's a guy who wants to solve real problems that affect real people in this country. And the Democrats, of course, can't tolerate that. But Biden, it was such a he's a high risk for losing, and also for embarrassing the party and driving away all kinds of people, including future voters, you know, the young people. So the Democrats, I figure they'll talk him out of it. But bottom line is, he hasn't been talked out of it yet. He gives a speech today, and in the speech, the theme of his race against, he hopes, Trump, he doesn't know. Maybe it'll be somebody else. Maybe it'll be several people. Maybe it'll be multiple, you know, parties running. But the theme of it is that MAGA, right? MAGA, I guess that's your Trump people, MAGA, right?
Make America okay, yeah, people. MAGA, whatever.
MAGA, yeah, so the MAGA is just really, really bad, and they're going to destroy our democracy, and that's the only thing he's really talking about, okay? So, and that's fine. It's fine if you are a narcissist and you can't see past your nose, which is what we have with Joe Biden and most of his advisors up there. So I was listening to this, I'm listening to what they're saying, what he's saying, his emphasis, and it's very similar to the other speech he gave over a year ago in Philadelphia, where he had two Marines and red lights behind him, and it was a very fascist looking speech. And again, it was about MAGA, the danger of MAGA to democracy. Now, the MAGA people, first off, I don't even know, you know, he's got these guys like, oh, I know what all the MAGA people are. Well, he doesn't. There's a wide range of people that support Trump. They're not, it doesn't matter. This is a boogeyman, and he's made it up. This one. So I thought, well, this is where the list comes in. I said, well, let's see what are some of the big problems that I think many people might like to hear talked about with an eye to solving them or making them better or fixing them, whatever it is, the problems. And so I just thought of a bunch of, and so here's some problems that apparently, you know, Joe Biden has no clue about. And I didn't have them in any particular order, but I'm going to start with the last one, which is actually the most important one. And that is this incredible loss of our constitutionally guaranteed rights, particularly of speech, particularly of association, particularly of, you know, communication. You know, we've got the government hand in hand with, you know, the media, the social media, other media, you know, the banks. Let's just throw the banks in there because that's communication too, right? We communicate. Our biggest message that we send is what we spend our money on, and we do it all
electronically
on credit cards and all of that. Banking, free speech, what we say, what we do, all of this. In today's world, in the United States, which should be the last country we see this in, but it's not. All of this is something we have to double and triple and third, fourth guess ourselves on, because we don't want our bank accounts frozen. We don't want our YouTube account canceled. We don't want to get locked out of our Facebook or our Twitter or whatever. And yet, This is a real concern. So they've got all these people, not MAGA people, all the people in this country,
right,
kind of boxed into some sort of corral where we have to behave a certain way, or else, you know, we're going to get fed to the wolves. This is, you know, we're going to get cut off from our food supply, whatever, cut off from our bank accounts, cut off from our way of making a living. If it happens to be being published in some way or producing a podcast or video. So if they don't like what we're producing, okay, so there's a problem. And I had that one as one of my last problems. But there's, okay, that's just one problem. But no, he doesn't have to talk about that. In fact, Joe Biden says, we're giving you another vaccine, and I don't want you people talking about how bad it would be because we know better than you. So again, very authoritarian, very paternalistic, and he doesn't see it. See, Biden, I don't think his people, you know, see it. And okay, so let me go to the first problem. Biden says democracy is at risk. Well, I don't know what kind of democracy we have in this country. It is a representative democracy by design. So we don't have like straight up democracy like maybe some other countries have. We don't have that. But let's say we have some democracy in this country. But this country is not a democracy, and it's also not a republic. It is an oligarchy. Okay?
Right.
Everybody knows that. All studies show that. And everything that you expect from this country is only what you would expect from an oligarchy. We don't get people in this country don't understand anything about how their government doesn't satisfy them. Why is our government so rotten? We vote for better government, but we always get worse government. Why is that? Well, because votes don't matter. You know, we are an oligarchy. We're run by a certain set of elite interests, and that's it. Okay, but, and I think that maybe is a little bit of a problem. You know, I'm not saying it hadn't been like that for a long time, but I mean, maybe that is a concern of Americans. You know, does our vote really count? And is it really about democracy, or is it really about something far more important on this whole structure of how our country runs politically? So there's a problem, but Biden doesn't see that. That's not a problem. No, that's not a problem. It's just MAGA. Get rid of those MAGA and everything will be better. Okay, now we have this border situation. He gave this speech in Arizona. So I think Kristen Sinema, who used to be a Democrat senator from Arizona, but now she is an independent senator from Arizona. In any case, she said, well, you know, Biden's down here in Arizona. Maybe we can get him to come by the border, take a look at what's going on down there. Because Arizona, obviously, not like Texas and some of the others, but it has an issue there. It is a border state. It has concern. It has it has flow. It has holes in the fence, whatever you want to call it. But no, he's not going to do that because, see, that's not a problem. The problem is just MAGA. It's just MAGA, man. MAGA rightists destroying our democracy. That's the problem. So he's not going to go see the border. And Biden hadn't seen the border one time since he's been president. Now, he's hearing more about the border because a bunch of these Republican border state governors decided to take the sanctuary city people up on their offer. They're sanctuary cities. Why not? They should be welcoming with open arms. But then turns out, we just said that. We actually don't have the money to welcome with open arms. We don't really want them, and you're evil for doing it. So, but the whole issue of whether you want to call it border security or just how we integrate our immigrants, how we handle them, what is, you know, and again, you know, we have something interesting in this country that no other country in the entire world has, and that's birthright citizenship. Nobody else has that. But we do have it. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's amazingly cool. But it actually, you know, is one of many things that feeds the problem. So are we thinking about how we want to handle any of that? No. Is Congress thinking? No, Congress isn't thinking about it. What about the president? You know, he wants to run for 4 more years. Is he thinking about it? No, he's not. Because you know what the problem is? It's MAGA. It's MAGA rightists. It's people on the right. It's people that like Trump. That's the problem. That's going to destroy Trump. No, Trump. No, it's not that. But that's what Biden thinks, and that's what he's telling people. That's his theme for 2024. That's what he's going to run on. So just skip over, you know, we don't have our free speech, and our liberties are not protected. The border's pretty screwed up. We have no strategy for even starting to deal with it. What are some other problems? Oh, I don't know. Let's try $34 trillion in current debt in a government that can't stop spending. There's an issue. Now, that's not an issue if there's 0% interest. It's great to be in debt when you're not paying interest on it. But let's say interest rates rise. Oh, my goodness, they have risen. So what does that mean for our tax dollars? Because you know what? You don't have to pay for a military. You really don't. We don't need to be making war, and we don't have to pay for military. We don't even have to have we can have a little teeny tiny military if we want to. We could just tell the guards, state guards, do it yourself. We'll all come together if we're attacked. We can do that. But you know what we can't do? We can't not pay the interest on the debt. We have to do that. We don't get to talk about it. We don't get to negotiate it down. That's required because they borrowed the money. This is legal obligation. It will be paid before defense will be paid. It will be paid before welfare will be paid. It will be paid before health care is paid. So, you know, this is a major issue. This is a major issue. You can't print your way out of this. This is a big problem. Oh, but I'm sorry. Biden, no, not a problem for Biden. It's MAGA, right? MAGA is the problem. They're going to destroy. I'll tell you something that's going to destroy the democracy. When people in this country who are dependent on money that comes from the federal government that it took from all of us and borrowed against all of us and redistributes it out, when we don't get that money and then we can't eat and we can't live and we're on the street, it's going to destroy our democracy. Yeah, that's going to be a big problem, right? And it ain't going to be MAGA that does it. It has nothing to do with MAGA. But no, these aren't problems for Joe Biden. So he's not worried about the debt. He's not worried about spending and how this country maintains its, foreign policy war. Oh, wait, there's a problem. What about all these wars that Joe Biden wants us into? He wants us to fight the proxy war in Ukraine. Let's to the last Ukrainian, he says. Yay, we're getting a lot of bang for our buck. As a Ukrainian dies, they kill a Russian. That's one less Russian. Wow, that's a big, that's good for us, right? That's his strategy. That's his insane, malicious strategy. Oh, but it's not enough because he says, we got to fight China. We got to fight China too. Where's the money for all this? What does, you know, you want to talk about something that will destroy democracy in this country? How about we get in a war and we lose it? And that's what we're going to do because, I don't know, can we keep track of all of our F-35s that are flying on training missions in South Carolina? No, we can't. Sometimes we lose them. Sometimes we lose them. And let me tell you this. Let me tell you this. This is a little bit of news, which I just happened to see. But people that run our country, particularly our military, they know about this or they should. So there's a big shipping, international shipping company that it hauls your barges, your big heavy stuff that has to go from one continent to another. Maersk is the name of this company. It's very massive.
Okay.
And Maersk has been the primary contractor to move materials and supplies and weapons for the Navy and for the Army. So, and a little bit probably for the Air Force, but mainly Navy and Army, because that's all the heavy stuff, the tanks, everything like that. Well, what they've done is they've decided they will no longer they're breaking ties. Maersk isn't going to do that for the Army and the Navy. What they did is they spun off a small portion of their massive global company, and they flagged it the right way so that they could do American military type stuff. And that's what does it. So that's not. And is that enough? Is that enough? No, not anywhere near enough. Meanwhile, he's talking about wars all over the planet. Well, how's he plan on doing it? Oh, I don't know. Maybe he's going to shoot a nuke. You know, that's pretty easy. Don't need to bring that over. Why don't we just have a nuclear war? Well, you know what? Guess what, Biden? That's going to destroy democracy. That's a threat to democracy. No, it's not, Karen. No, it's not. It's MAGA. It's MAGA. They're the ones who threaten democracy. I'm just telling you, this whole concern that the Democrats have, particularly the ones around Biden, and Biden himself, so short-sighted, so narcissistic, so ill-informed, so insanely stupid, and that's what we're being offered. In 2024, if this speech that they're saying is Biden's theme for 2024, it solves no problem in this country. It addresses no problem in this country. It offers no solutions. It puts all the blame on what he thinks is a group of people that act in coordination, which they don't. There is no such thing as a MAGA party. There are people that like Trump, don't like Trump. Heck, you could pick your day and there's different. The same people like him one day, don't like him another day. It's not even a thing. It's not even a thing. It's certainly not a thing that threatens democracy. But meanwhile, he's going to violate our rights, spend all the money that he can't pay back, okay, destroying every program that Americans depend on domestically. He's going to engage in current wars that make no sense and plan for and engage in future wars that make no sense. You know, what else? I mean, you know, he's not paying attention to the issues of the border. You know, I haven't even begun to mention things like, I don't know, cultural breakdown in this country, you know, divisions between right, left and center. I mean, you know, the argument and debate over various policies, you know, like woke or constitutionalism. We don't even define these. We don't know what they are. We haven't had that national conversation. We're just experiencing them. We're not yeah. working through them. But see, none of that rises to his level of concern. No, it's just MAGA. So, you know, it angers me because I don't consider myself MAGA. But for him to paint that as the one problem, if he could just solve that problem, all the other problems would be solved. And I imagine in his little pea brain, he thinks that maybe that would do it. That is so stupid. That is so unstatesmanlike, and it is so dangerous for this country. So he needs to stop. He needs to not run, clearly, if that's all he's going to talk about. It's just a shame. It's just a darn shame. Oh, I left off the other thing. The whole concept of political lawfare, you know, the way they've gone after Trump, is actually making Trump more popular. I wonder why. Maybe it's because a whole lot of people in this country have experience with the legal system. And I wonder if that experience was exactly all that they expected. It probably wasn't. And then see it turned on Trump, who they don't know. Trump's not, you know, a person like them. I mean, he's a wealthy person, all these things, former president. And they see how he's treated. And you know what? It does ring a bell to a whole bunch of people. Irregardless of party in this country, that have had feelings of helplessness and powerlessness when the state, whether it's local cops or the local government with, you know, state with eminent domain, any type of thing where you've had a run-in or an interface with an arm of government, including justice and the law and that kind of thing. And you came away from that experience feeling a little bit unhappy, a little bit dirty, a little bit, I'm not guilty, but why do I feel guilty? I didn't do anything, but why do I feel like, so, you know, these aren't good feelings, but this is how people feel when they deal with politics and government and law in their own lives. This is how they feel. They don't feel very good. And then when they see it, they say, you know what? But rich people don't have to have that. But then they say, oh, wait a minute. Some rich people do. If they challenge the status quo, or they challenge the government, or they piss off a politician. And guess what? If you tick off a politician and something happens to you locally, people make a connection. You don't piss off the wrong guy. You know? People know this intuitively, and many of them know it experientially. And so when we see it or read about it, the kinds of things they're doing to Trump, which really, it's very illustrative. I mean, people are learning, wait a minute, you can get arrested for that? Wait a minute, you can get your property taken for that? Oh, my God, who knew, you know? And again, you know, we're getting an education, but the education is not making us support Biden and dislike Trump. It's making us hate everybody and feel sorry for Trump. This is just, I'm telling you, except for the you know, obviously people that hate Trump, you know, he's getting what he deserves. But even those people have had similar experiences in that they didn't really come away from feeling like, hey, isn't America great? They've had experiences with the law, experiences with politicians, with the state, with government, with regulation, and they've come away from it feeling that America could do better. Well, guess what? You know, we now feel what, I mean, Trump's feeling what we felt. I mean, there's a certain type of connection there, which but wait a minute. Now, I might be talking about a big problem in our country that maybe we should start solving, but no, Biden assures me it's just MAGA. MAGA's the problem. Okay, get rid of MAGA and it'll all be great. Well, it's not a winning strategy, and it's very upsetting to me. And I wish that Biden would just quit it and go away. And I think Trump's probably cooked also. So let's try again. And you know what? We have some candidates. The Republicans have a variety of candidates. I don't know how good they are. The Democrats have an opportunity to put RFK up there. And you know what they're doing with RFK? He's worse than Trump to them. They're treating him worse than they treat Trump. And it's just
he might even be as bad as Sanders.
I think if it was a choice between Bernie and Bobby, they would choose Bernie. They hate Bobby so badly. They hate him so bad because what is he doing? Well, he's speaking like a regular American, and he's questioning the wars, and he's questioning the oligarchy, and you're not allowed to do that. Not allowed to do that. So it's just an awful thing. Well, I don't really have a positive spin, but I will say thank you if Biden will just shut up and and that's what he needs to do. He needs to do that. And I'm not voting for him either way. I don't like the man. Yeah. I don't like his policies. I don't think he's even competent. I never thought he was. But and he's a warmonger. He's a warmongering neocon, and I don't vote for them. I don't support them.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this, and I'll close with this. Watching Biden, I almost feel sorry for the whole Democratic Party. And I have no respect for them either or any of the political parties. I don't feel sorry for the parties. I have nothing but contempt for most of them. And certainly the Democrats, I have a contempt for their party. Biden is making me feel sorry for them, which is just, you know, that's insane.
So, well, here we are. We will feel sorry for Trump and for the Democratic Party.
Equal opportunity, right?
Yeah.
That's right. And you know what's sad about that? I don't feel sorry for Biden. I don't feel sorry that he's lost his mind, that he's dementia. I don't feel sorry for him that his legacy history will not treat him well. I don't feel sorry for him. He has destroyed my ability to feel any type of sympathy for him. And I feel sorry again. Like I said, his own party who apparently can't get rid of him, can't make him stop. And of course, all the people that are on the wrong side of Biden's narcissism, obviously is Trump, but it's also many other people, too. Biden has many enemies.
Indeed. Karen, thank you so much. That's the music. We've got to go.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you...